Welcome to the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast, where each week we simplify the complexities of your leadership journey.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast, where we aim to give you critical and easily applicable leadership concepts to help you along your journey. I'm your co-host, Scott, and I have the privilege of talking about life and leadership with the owner and founder of Rising Tide Leadership, Dr. Michael David Morales, a.k.a. Mo.
Hey, nice intro today, Scotty. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Excited to dive into today's topic. So let's talk leadership.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, brand new intro, right? You know, I had to, right. I had to make sure I got it right.
Nailed it.
So, Mo, but fun fact, though, I don't really know if you know this about me, but I am a huge animated movie fan. So I know that might seem silly, but even as an adult, I still find them quite enjoyable. And one of my favorite animated movies that came out in 2015 was the movie Inside Out. The movie is about the mind of a young girl named Riley and her personified emotions that control her actions. And those emotions are joy, anger, fear, disgust, and sadness. Ultimately, Joy, or the character of Joy, acts as the leader and throughout the movie tries to limit sadness and her influence, as she doesn't really view that emotion as important as anger, fear, and or disgust. And then again, like most movies here, you know, we know there's that defining moment. And for Inside Out, it's when Riley's family actually moves from Minnesota to San Francisco, which is kind of a big move, and we can only imagine the turmoil and culture shock that probably caused, especially knowing you and I know what San Francisco is like. But Riley has a really big emotional moment at school, and this leads Joy and sadness to have an adventure in her mind and all on their own. And on this adventure, Joy learns a really valuable lesson. She begins to understand the purpose of sadness. So sadness alerts others to when Riley is emotionally overwhelmed and needs help. Joy comes to realize that every emotion is important and essential when it comes to growth, development, and then even leadership. So today we are delving deep into the concept of emotional intelligence, particularly regarding leadership. So Mo, let's go ahead and kick this off by defining what emotional intelligence actually means in the context of leadership.
Yeah, great intro. Appreciate that. Emotional intelligence, or what everybody in the business world calls EQ, refers to one's ability to recognize and understand and then manage emotions of both yourself and others. So in a leadership context, it's about navigating the complex interpersonal dynamics, inspiring, motivating teams, and making really sound decisions that are based on emotional awareness. How's that?
I mean, that's a pretty great overview. So then if we're thinking about three pillars of emotional intelligence, so what would those three pillars be?
Sure. The three pillars that we'll be talking about today are of emotional intelligence for leaders would be self-awareness, empathy, and of course, relationship management. So we're going to break all those down.
Awesome. Sounds like we got our work cut out for us. So let's go ahead and start with self-awareness. So what does it mean for a leader to be actually self-aware?
Sure. So when we're talking about the emotionally intelligent leader, Scott, the first pillar would be this: leaders are self-aware. Now, shocking, right? But you would be amazed. Self-awareness, although it's the foundation of emotional intelligence, which involves understanding emotions, strengths, weaknesses, values, goals, leaders can recognize different triggers, biases, limitations, and this allows them, if they do it right, to regulate their emotions effectively and make more and better informed decisions.
Yeah, I had to chuckle a little bit at that. So I'm sure we can all think of individuals who aren't self-aware, or think of times even for ourselves where we weren't self-aware. But for that individual that isn't self-aware, how can leaders begin to just excel and get better in that area?
Yeah, that's kind of the hard part, really. It's the catch-22. So if you're not self-aware, then how can you begin to start working on the process, right? So this is really where you really have to be familiar with what it means to be a leader. So by nature, if you want to be in leadership, it's not really about who you're supervising, right? But it's more of a matter of how you are getting better. So if leaders are always trying to get better, they're hopefully listening to other men and women who are smarter or wiser, smarter and wiser than they are. So I guess what I'm trying to say, Scott, is that if you can't start you can't start the self-awareness process on your own. Somebody has to pretty much point it out to you that you're messed up, right? So one of the best parts about being under my mentor, Kevin Cobb, under his leadership years ago, early in my career, was that he never really told me that I had to be self-aware, but he kind of taught me daily. I would say something or do something and he would ask. He would always ask a question, either this specific question or questions like this. He'd say, Mo, why exactly did you just do what you did? And why did you do it that way? And at first, those kind of questions were annoying, probably because I thought I knew everything and I didn't need help. But the more I started actually answering those questions, you know, when Kevin asked, I had to really like look inward to myself. And I realized that the first problem that I had, Scott, was my lack of self-awareness. So I guess the question for each of our listeners out there is this. The simple one, are you self-aware? And let this be your first encouragement to reach out to other people to ask them that very question. I'm telling you, listeners, go to somebody that you know, somebody that you trust, and ask them, you know, tell me about my self-awareness. Am I self-aware? And they'll probably look at you like you have three heads. But as you kind of get into that conversation and they really see that you want to know if you are self-aware of the things that you are doing, then that's going to, it's going to start an open and honest dialogue with the people that care about you. So ask those people, because Scott, we need to understand ourselves on a self-awareness level. But sometimes we're reluctant to do this because just like everybody in the world, none of us want to find out, you know, what's wrong with us. And none of us want to kind of say, yeah, I need to change some stuff and I need to fix some stuff.
Yeah, 100%. That was the first thing that actually popped into my head was like, oh, all right, do I really want to know? But in reality, as leaders, we should want to know. So,
you should. So
our next second pillar is all about empathy. So how does empathy play into emotional intelligence for leaders?
Yeah, so that second pillar, Scott, I love it. And it kind of plays off, you know, once you're self-aware, leaders who are intelligent or the emotionally intelligent leaders are empathetic. So empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of others, which is a lot harder than it actually seems. And empathetic leaders are attuned to emotions and perspectives of their team members, which in turn is going to foster trust, collaboration, and effective communication. So by demonstrating empathy, Scott, leaders can create a supportive work environment where individuals feel valued and understood.
So one of the things that pops into my head, and I have often heard leaders try to encourage others to be mentally tougher when it comes to feelings or emotions. So What would you say if you're not one to share your feelings or share the feelings of others, how would you recommend to our leaders to navigate that?
Yeah, I guess the answer to that, Scott, is the bottom line is leaders, you're going to hate some of you are not going to want to hear this, but leaders have to live in the feelings and emotions realm, meaning, you know, we're not rational beings all the time, right? or most of the time, you know, we are emotional beings. And so the people that you are supervising every day, that you're leading every day, they've got emotions, they've got feelings, and you have to be attuned to that stuff. And you got to be empathetic. And so this doesn't necessarily mean that you have to let people slide on responsibilities. I'm not saying that at all. But a leader that doesn't care is not going to be a leader for long. And in fact, John Maxwell says in his 21 irrefutable laws of leadership is, you know, your people need to know that you care about them before you can lead them. And so I would recommend for all of our listeners to actually go back to an earlier one of our podcasts that talks about leaders taking care of both themselves, and their people. So back to this question though, Scott, is, you know, what kind of vulnerability do you have with your people? So for our leaders out there, are you vulnerable? Do your people know, you know, some things about you, a lot of things about you, nothing about you? Because leaders, you have to know how to walk the line. And it's definitely a tightrope. But, you know, further than that, we have to be able to share our feelings with somebody. And Scott, I've been a chaplain in the Army for over a decade and a half at this point. And the first mm-hmm. thing that one of my chaplain mentors told me when I first got in, he told me this. He said, Mo, every chaplain needs a chaplain. Kind of like every shrink needs a shrink, right? Every chaplain needs mm-hmm. a chaplain. And man, I'm telling you, I took that to heart. And that was probably some of the best advice that I ever received. And Scott, nobody can go it alone, right? No man is an island. Mm-hmm. We've heard this. So for our listeners out there, here's another question. Who are the people in your life that can speak into your life and do it freely? I have a handful of those people in my life, Scott, and I call those the inner circle. Also, throwing back to John Maxwell's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, he's got an entire chapter on the inner circle. And so leaders, you have to have an inner circle. In fact, you probably have a couple of inner circles and you don't even know it. So, you know, there's a lot of people, Scott, and actually before we even started recording today, right, you were talking to me about some stuff and we were talking about giving advice and all these kind of things. And you said, man, there's some people that just love to give advice. And Scott, what's the first thing that I teach about advice?
You should never give advice.
Why? Because?
Because nobody ever actually wants your advice.
Nobody actually would do that. There you go. And the reason you know that, right? And I literally just put you on the spot is because that's so true. Nobody wants your great sage wisdom and advice. Nobody wants my great sage wisdom and advice. Most people just want somebody to listen to them. And so when some people over the years have come up to me and said, Mo, I think you're doing this wrong and that wrong, whatever, I have a favorite line that I tell people, and it's kind of a joke, but it's, you know, kind of only half joking. And I say, well, lucky for both you and me, there's about three or four people in this world that I care about their opinions, and you're not one of them. And people usually look at me and they're like, oh, that's right. Because, you know, Scott, I've got the people that know me. I've got the people that I trust. Those are the people in my inner circle. And it doesn't mean that I don't care about what other people say. Like I said, it's half jokingly. I take criticism all the time. I love constructive criticism. In fact, I was just in a meeting the other day with some people that I supervise, and I said, hey, what am I missing? Because I want to know what I'm missing in a situation. And Scott, I always end with the same question at the end. Leaders, write this one down, take it to the bank, keep it close to you, put it on a sticky note, tattoo it on your arm, whatever you got to do, but here it is. The last thing that you should ask your people at the end of every meeting or every conversation with them is, how can I help? Because as a leader, that is your job, is to help other people to solve problems. So ask that question. Leaders, when's the last time you asked that question? How can I help? I am telling you, Scott, if you go to your people and they bring some stuff to you and you end with the last question and say, before we go, I just want to ask, how can I help? Let me tell you, even if they don't need your help or want your help or think that you can even help them in any way, the fact that you put that out there is going to let them know that you are empathetic and you are, as one of my mentors says, you are moving to their side of the table. And leaders, that's what we do. If you want to be empathetic, a great way to think about it metaphorically is, what does it take for me, as if I'm sitting across from somebody that I supervise, to move to their side of the table? Because when people feel like you are figuratively and sometimes literally on their side of the table, they're going to trust you more and they're going to know that you care about them, and it's going to make you a more emotionally intelligent leader.
That's great. And I feel like that's such an important reminder that you're right. Nobody can go it alone. I feel like sometimes mm-hmm. even in positions of leadership, when things get overwhelming or stressful, we can jump into that almost hyper-focused type of mentality where we do try to go it alone. But in reality, we just can't do that. And it really seems that empathy is such a key to building strong relationships within a team or organization. So Looking at our third pillar, relational management. So Mo, why don't you talk to us about what that entails for emotionally intelligent leaders?
Yeah, the third and final pillar today, Scott, for the emotionally intelligent leaders, this. Leaders are relational. And Scott, that's what it comes down to. That's all you and I ever talk about, right? It's how are you being relational with the people that you are hanging out with? Relationship management involves leveraging your own self-awareness and the empathy, right? We just talked about that, which help you to cultivate a positive relationship with each of the people on your team. Scott, this is when you start to have more influence with others, because the emotionally intelligent leader excels at a couple things. Conflict resolution, you got to be good at that. Negotiation and building consensus of the team, right? Your job is to bring people together. These kind of leaders prioritize open communication, constructive feedback, and then, Scott, they empower their team members to succeed. So strong relationship management skills will ultimately enable leaders to foster a culture of trust, loyalty, and productivity within their organizations.
That's great. Now, you just mentioned kind of that last part, strong relationship management skills.
Right.
So what are some of those skills?
Yeah, so some of the strong relationship skills, if you wanted to kind of jot down a list and things that you need to work on are these. This is, Scott, how you can know if you are doing good in the relationship realm. And here it is. These skills include communicating clearly, right? One of my professors told me, good speakers are a dime a dozen, but effective communicators are one in a million. And what we want our leaders to be out there are effective communicators. We want you to communicate clearly and effectively. Another relationship skill, Scott, is listening actively. You know, it's not just passively listening. It's, you know, listening in an active fashion, being engaged in the conversation. Another one is cooperation. And another is this, Scott, and a lot of people don't think about this one. To stay away from social pressure, you know, if you want to be good at relationships and you are the supervisor, you need to be the person that rises above the coarse jokes or people making fun of other people. Scott, you know that I'm not a big sarcasm guy. I think that people need to be genuine, and especially in leadership positions. When we're talking about conflict, Scott, we also need to be able to do conflict in a constructive manner. And a final one, a final relationship skill, Scott, that I'd say for our listeners out there would be to seek help when needed, right? And we've talked about that in previous podcasts. Leaders think a lot of time think that, man, I just can't ask for help because people are going to think I'm weak. And I'm telling you, it's the exact opposite. Leaders know when to ask for help, and they take it when they find people who are better than them to help make the team and themselves better.
Yeah. So listening to you talk about relationships. So for someone like myself, where one of my strengths is woo, I love the idea of building relationships and it gets me excited.
Right.
But I know not everyone is like me. And I know some of our leaders are probably a little bit more introverted. So if a leader is a little bit more introverted or has those tendencies, how would you recommend that they navigate this?
Yeah, that's a great question because, sometimes it's easy when you're, for lack of a better term, outgoing, extroverted, you're loud and boisterous, whatever, out there to have a good time. And a lot of times introverts are like, well, you know, like, what about me? And let me tell you this. I would say that people who are introverted are a lot of the best leaders that I've ever known, because they are quiet. They don't have to say a lot of words. They choose their relationships wisely. And so sometimes, Scott, they're better navigating this. And so a lot of what we've been talking about today, right, could be seen in a lot of my top 50 books. But there's one in particular that I think everybody needs to pick up and read. And I think, Scott, you've read this one, Emotional Intelligence 2.0. Have we read that one yet?
We have.
Okay. So we read that, right? And so and we'll put this in the show notes, but you really should pick up a copy of Emotional Intelligence 2.0. And so it doesn't matter whether you're introverted or extroverted or somewhere in between, but what Emotional Intelligence 2.0 says is everybody can do it, because what matters is that conflict resolution for instance, is going to be part of the leadership journey. And so it takes wherever you are on that spectrum, you know, introvert to extrovert or somewhere in between. And it says, this is how you take actual actionable steps to get better at, as you said, Scott, navigating what it means to have relational skills. And so for all our listeners out there, whether you're introvert or extrovert or somewhere in between, what does it take for you to express your feelings to others? Because that's vital. And again, I'm not saying that you need to go pour your heart out to everybody you know, but you do have to have somebody. And if you're introverted, you're probably saying, well, I'm going to choose those people. But when you find somebody, man, that's going to be somebody that again, you can bring into your inner circle, and it's going to make you an even stronger leader. Because Scott, if we want to break the barrier, the relational wall, right? That relational barrier, it's going to take, you know, somebody that's able to speak into your life now and in the future. So who are those people in your life? And so, Scott, let me just say this finally on this point. I always have leaders take a couple of assessments. And the first one is the Gallup Strength Finder. We talk about that a lot. And the other one is the DISC profile. Now, for Gallup, you can actually get that one right off Amazon. You know, you buy the book and it gives you a code. You can find your top five strengths that get you on your way. And so do that. Do it soon. Now, for the DISC profile, those assessments can be found all over the place. There's some free ones. There's ones that cost money. The one, Scott, that we use, and you've taken this one, and everybody who works with me takes this profile that I give, and it's very extensive. But that's the one that I really like, and I've done a lot of research over this over the years. So if you want to take that DISC profile, again, you can find it free online, or you could even reach out to us, and I'll give you my DISC profile. And I'm telling you, you will love it. Scott, you and I have learned a lot about, right? We've learned a lot about your personality, right?
Yes.
Through Gallup Strengths Finder. You know, actually, Scott, in Strengths Finder, you actually took the accelerated one, and it's the Strengths 34. So it takes all 34 strengths, right? And it makes up.
Yes.
and you would know your best strengths and your biggest growth areas or weaknesses, as some people call them. But, you know, leaders, you need to know. Why do I say that, Scott? I say that because leaders need to know themselves and be self-aware of both their strengths, which is what Gallup does, right? But also their personality. Because, Scott, I thought I was extroverted for years. But believe it or not, I'm an introvert. And everyone's like, Mo, there is no way you're an introvert. Yes, I'm an introvert because I get my energy from different things. And they're all introverted kind of energy things. And so you may think you know yourself, leaders, but I'm telling you, take a couple of assessments, and it will be a game changer. And then Scott, of course, as you know, everybody on our team takes both of these assessments. And so now I'm not just self-aware, but I'm learning how to be socially aware as well. And we'll do an entire podcast on what it means to be socially aware. But pick up those profiles. A Gallup Strengths Finder, DISC profile, it'll change your life.
Yeah, just to reiterate that to our listeners, I had done none of that until Mo and I started working together, and it's definitely a game changer. I mean, it's all of a sudden like things just start to click. You're like, oh,
right.
That's why I feel this way. That's why that bothers me. Those sorts of things. So, Mo, to kind of close this out here, do you have any final thoughts for us today?
Yeah, I do. And it's just this. Remember this, leaders, the key differentiator is a genuine commitment to continuous self-improvement. It's about you getting better, not about making your people better, right? You're not there to work on your people. They're not cars, right? Don't work on them, work on And the emotionally intelligent leader is going to be humble enough to acknowledge his or her own shortcomings and actively seek feedback from others. So invest time and effort in developing these emotional intelligent skills, read the books, all that kind of stuff, hang out with the right people, take the assessments, practice it, seek out people that can help you. And, you know, Scott, for those who prioritize their own growth, those leaders are going to be the ones that set a positive example for their teams. And they're going to create a culture that values emotional intelligence at all levels of the organization.
What a powerful point to end on. And so self-awareness, empathy, and in relationships. So all things that our leaders can practice to improve their own emotional intelligence. And with that, we are at the end of this episode. So if you guys enjoyed listening today, we would encourage you all to rate, review, and subscribe. And please do not forget to share this episode all over the place. Thank you all for joining us today. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rising Tide Leadership Podcast. Highlights and resource links are available for you in the show notes. We hope that you will join us next time as we continue on the leadership journey. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss out, and share with others so they don't miss out. See you next time.